Welcome to episode 14 of Hip Perspectives, a podcast on law, life, and awesome women. I'm Annie Rogaski. In this episode, I have the pleasure of talking with Paula Boggs. Paula spent decades practicing law, during which she checked off just about every legal box she could think of. And then she took the next logical step. She started a band. Rekindling her love of music, she is now the front woman of the Paula Boggs Band, making music that touches on blues, soul, rock, and other genres. You'll actually hear portions of Paula's music in this podcast. If you like it, check out her band. I'll include a link to her website in the show notes. Not only does Paula share her music, she also cares about helping others. She has a media company, Boggs Media, that partners with both My Brother's Keeper Alliance and the NAACP Legal Defense Fund. In short, she rocks. A special thanks to Richard Chu for introducing me to Paula. Richard is a fellow podcaster who helped me out as I was developing this podcast. If you haven't already listened to Richard's podcast, it's called Chu Untied. That's H-S-U Untied. Give it a listen. He interviews lawyers with interesting hobbies. And it's true, lawyers really are interesting people. I wanted to also send a shout out to one of our prior podcast guests, Sally Thornton, for an amazing keynote address at the club's third anniversary party. She shared her insights on the future of work and encouraged the audience to do one thing that would be an energy multiplier. You heard her talk about that a little bit on the podcast. Basically, combining multiple things into one. Not multitasking, which she reminds us makes us stupider, but for example, walking and talking, getting exercise while conducting meetings or networking. So what will your multiplier be this week? Tweet it to @hip_legal and share your multiplier with our followers. And now here is Paula Boggs. It is my pleasure to welcome to Hip Perspectives Paula Boggs, singer, songwriter, and front woman of the rock band, the Paula Boggs Band. Welcome, Paula.
Thank you, Annie. It's great to be here.
Well, thanks for joining us. You have just a fascinating career path as I looked at where you've spent your time over the years. It's a resume that I think many people would dream of, being in the Army Infantry Airborne School, White House attorney, assistant U.S. attorney, private practice lawyer, in-house lawyer, all the way up to executive vice president and GC of Starbucks. An incredible resume, but what is most interesting to me about what you've been doing is that you started a band. After all of that and being a lawyer for so long, you took what seems to me to be a very sharp turn in a different direction. Can you tell us a little bit about that transition?
Absolutely, Annie. I think, you know, the first thing I share with people about my journey in law is it was really an accidental path for me. And what I mean by that is I chose to go to law school, honestly, as a delay tactic. And by that, I mean, I was a four-year Army ROTC scholarship cadet. And between my junior and senior years of college, I first went to airborne school, spent 3 weeks in Fort Benning, Georgia, and then immediately following that, I spent 6 weeks at what is called advanced camp at Fort Bragg, North Carolina. So for 9 weeks, the Army had been telling me when to get up, when to go to bed, what to eat, how to eat it. And by the time I returned to Johns Hopkins for the beginning of my senior year of college, I found myself paralyzed often. I would stare at my closet, not knowing what to wear because I hadn't had to make that decision for 9 weeks. And so a series of these things led me to conclude I wasn't quite ready for active duty. And so I commenced a delay strategy, which for me meant attending graduate school. And so I decided to take the GREs and LSATs. The LSATs were first, and law school was preferable, really mostly because it was 3 years rather than two of delay. And so that was my strategy. If I did well on the LSATs, I'd go to law school. If not, I take the GREs and go to graduate school, pursuing my master's in international studies. That was my game plan. The LSATs turned out, well for me, and so law school it was. And so I think the most amazing thing about, almost 30 years in law for me is almost 30 years of law for me before starting this new chapter, mostly centered in music and education.
And so when you were thinking of your delay strategies, starting a band didn't really come up as an option?
No, it really didn't, Annie. I was back then, and back then was as a 17-year-old making decisions around my next life chapter. Really, college was not an option. I was definitely going to college. And so with that, I thought I was making a binary decision around whether to pursue a more academic route or one in music. And, with the wisdom I have today, I understand I really didn't have to view the world that way or the choices before me that way, but I didn't understand that as a 17-year-old. And so I made the decision to pursue the quote academic route and chose to attend Johns Hopkins on my 4-year Army ROTC scholarship.
And so did music sort of play in the background throughout your legal career, or did you really put it on hold and then come back to it later in life?
Great question. For me, it wasn't a sudden thing, but honestly, over a course of really 15 years, I would say, music became less and less prominent in my life. And so it was central to me from ages 10 to high school graduation, age 18. As I embarked upon my college chapter, I was still writing music and playing an occasional coffee house gig, but those were very few and far between. In law school, I was actually playing in a folk mass choir. At the time, I was Roman Catholic, and so through my 20s, it was through in my choir work that I stayed connected with music, and indeed I was from time to time writing original music for folk mass. But by the time I got to my 30s, early 30s, I had pretty much left the Catholic Church, and with that, my sort of touchstone with music was gone too. And honestly, by my mid-30s, music was in a box for me as I climbed the legal and corporate ladder.
I find it fascinating when I meet people who create things. And I see lawyers as fairly creative people. We can write briefs and we can argue for a change in the law and be creative about that. But I've encountered a few lawyer musicians along the way, and it seems like they have something inside of them that they just have to translate to get out. And I've never experienced that. Is that how it is for you, or do you have to work to write the songs that you write in a way like you were crafting a brief or you were writing a story?
For me, part of the beauty of being a lawyer for as long as I was the ability to, you know, tell and create stories as a lawyer. And I think that aspect of being a lawyer was what attracted me to the specialties within law I pursued. You know, as a trial lawyer, one of the things you get to do is create and tell a story. And so, you know, that was always quite wonderful and fulfilling for me. And even as I moved forward in my law career and left the, you know, the active practice of litigation and trial lawyering, I still had an opportunity to, you know, be part of amazing business stories and to create, you know, narratives around a greater story. That was the case for both Dell Computer Corporation during the time I was there and with Starbucks. I tried to, through observation and living, share the stories inside me, really consider a central part of being a songwriter, sharing the stories I had inside me and I observed. So, you know, for me, that aspect of being a musician is one of the most rewarding for me.
Is there anyone or anything in particular that inspires the songs that you write?
It really depends. I'm all over the map, Annie. I have some songs that are inspired by my life experience of joy, love, sadness, tragedy, all of the emotions, you know, most of us live. I have written other songs that I was inspired to write after reading a book or a newspaper article. There are other songs that I've been moved to write after hearing somebody else's story or just observing. I have written songs after an incredibly beautiful walk. You know, it just really depends. And I think the key for me is to be open to the song wherever it may be. And, you know, I find that if I'm open to it, I'm much more likely to receive it.
How has joy played a role in your work or your songwriting?
Joy is incredibly important, and it's ironic because as a younger songwriter, I thought I needed to be sad or be wrestling with some tragic event to write good music.
Right.
Life experience has taught me that's not true at all, at least it's not true for me. And I recently read a review of our album, Carnival of Miracles, written by a Dutch publication. And that writer was underscoring the joy he felt in listening to our music. And I was so honored by that, because at the end of the day, even though there are songs on the album that reflect sadness, mm-hmm. at the end of the day, if someone leaves after listening to the entire album with a sense of joy for life, then I've succeeded, and we've succeeded as a band.
That's a fantastic thing to share with the world, to bring a little bit more joy into people's lives. And I know I've listened to some of your songs, and I've definitely seen some aspects of sadness, but the one in particular, the video, I forget which the name of the song, but with the diner and the veteran, it's hopeful.
Yes, Carnival of Miracles.
Yeah, and so you kind of get this, I don't know, you go along on an emotional ride with the characters in the song, which is pretty powerful.
Thank you.
Now, having been leading a band for a few years, what has surprised you most about your experience in music?
Well, among the things I've experienced as, you know, a relatively new performing artist, you start at the beginning. Just as a budding lawyer, I had to earn my stripes, and I have to do that as a singer-songwriter band member today. And, you know, not everybody is a believer. I think most people, before hearing our music, you know, presume that perhaps it's a vanity project or something along those lines. And so, you know, we build our audience and our fans, you know, person by person. And I've learned through this experience that each performance is a gift. And it really doesn't matter whether there are two people in the audience or 2,000. It's the same show. You give the same level of heart, and hopefully, you know, by doing that, you win a fan. I believe the experience I'm having today in music has actually made me a better leader and person, and that's a great thing.
That is fantastic. Maybe we should have, as leadership training, people should start a band.
Yes. Absolutely.
Taking you back a little bit to the legal profession, you saw a lot of different work environments. Is there anything that, as you reflect back on your experience, that you would suggest that companies or law firms think about to increase the number of women and minorities in leadership positions in the legal profession?
Yes. I think it is human nature for many of us to be drawn most significantly to those who remind us of ourselves. And it really takes more work to go beyond that comfort zone. I've had the good fortune of mentors at every step of my career who, on the surface, looked nothing like me, but who, despite that, took a chance on me. And I think therein lies, you know, part of the issue and opportunity for us in law.
Yeah, I think that's a great observation and suggestion. The birds of a feather concept really has seemed to limit progression for a lot of folks. And I like how you stated that it's getting outside of your comfort zone, and maybe it takes a little bit more work, but the rewards are huge if you can manage to create a diverse law firm or law department or even company. This goes beyond law, but I think that's a great suggestion.
And, you know, and here's the other thing, Annie, diverse environments are actually more highly performing environments. That has certainly been my experience. And I think if you talk to our clients at Starbucks, for example, they will say, Paula built a world-class legal team. It was also an incredibly diverse legal team. And those two things work hand in hand, in my experience.
Right. Yeah, I think that's absolutely true. And we're seeing more and more evidence of that beyond the anecdotal. It's an important point that I hope we're making more progress on these days.
Absolutely.
Do you have any asks of our listeners that you'd like to share?
Well, I'm assuming that many of your listeners are lawyers, Annie. And if that presumption is correct, here's my advice. The law is a beautiful profession, and it certainly has been the source of many gifts for me over a generation. It's important, though, for us lawyers to never lose sight of the diversity of who we are. Most of us are many more things than simply lawyers. The demands of law too often, I think, force us to limit the diversity of other things beyond law. And at least speaking from personal experience, I'm really glad I got back to a more full view of my diversity. And so my ask of my fellow lawyers is to never forget how beautifully diverse you are, and find ways unique to you to stay in touch with that diversity throughout your career.
That is fantastic advice. There's so many lawyers, particularly in law firms, I think, who push things off to another day because their days are so full and the billable hour is always calling. And time passes by very quickly.
It sure does.
Well, my final question for you, Paula, is what is your superpower?
You know, my superpower is not a figure like Superman or Wonder Woman. I think at the end of the day, my superpower is faith. And that faith is not just in, you know, a being bigger than myself, which it is, but I've had the great fortune to surround myself with people who have faith in me and towards whom I have faith. And I think at the end of the day, that is a secret ingredient of my life.
I love that. It's something that you don't hear every day, but it is probably an underlying feature of many high-functioning workplaces, that you have faith in those that you're working with.
Yes.
Well, thank you so much, Paula, for joining us. This has been fantastic to hear about your journey and your joys. And I am so thrilled to have had a chance to talk with you about your path.
Thank you, Annie, and thanks to your listeners. I found out.
Thanks for listening. This has been Annie Rogaski with HIP Perspectives. Please share your feedback with us at contact@hiplegal.com and rate us on iTunes and Stitcher. If there's an awesome woman we should interview, please let us know. And if there is a particular topic you'd like to hear about, share that with us as well. Hope you had a wonderful Thanksgiving, and I hope your week is filled with working joy.